It promotes the free flow of information about government, technology, education, current events, and history, relying upon our steadfast Constitution to frame the informed consent of the Republic so that government forever remains servant, not master. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, its sponsors, or guests. Liberty Watch is produced and hosted by Charles Heller. Any mistakes are his responsibility. This program is about freedom and the people who contribute to freedom in various ways. The way contributed that freedom was contributed to by these guests is unique in that it is the family, the widow of guitar maker Leo Fender and his biographer, Dr. Randall Bell. Dr. Bell is from Fullerton, California, and his biography is about Leo Fender, and it's called Leo Fender and the rest of the title, Dr. Bell?
Leo Fender, The Quiet Giant Heard Around the World.
Quiet Giant Heard Around the World. I don't have the book open in front of me because I got it electronically, but I read every word of it, and I feel like I now know Leo Fender. Also on the line with us is Leo's widow, Phyllis Fender. Phyllis, welcome.
Good morning to you and everyone listening.
It is such a pleasure, and thank you for sharing through Dr. Bell's biography. Thank you for sharing about Leo, and a very humble man, born in 1909, passed away in 1992, I think fairly early in 1992, if I'm correct?
Yes, it was March.
Yeah, and just a guy that really did change the world. I'll leave the reveal for the end if you want me to talk about what was the great reveal towards the end of the book, which I think was probably one of the more fascinating parts of it, but either one of you can answer this. In what way did Leo Fender change the world? You decide who answers it, which one of you.
Well, Phyllis is pointing at me, so I guess it's me. You know, Leo Fender changed the world because, dramatically, because prior to Leo Fender, all music, at least in terms of guitars, were acoustic guitars. And there were some experiments going on in the late 1930s, early 1940s with adding a microphone and putting a mic inside the body of a guitar, acoustic guitar, and adding pickups to, hollow body acoustic guitars. But Leo Fender got the idea to create a what we consider today a modern electric guitar. And that way guitar players got heard. And that revolutionized country western music in the 1950s and really was the platform for the invention of rock and roll in the 1960s. So if you've listened to a song recently, you've been influenced by Leo Fender.
Interesting. Describe the moment when he had the revelation that people couldn't hear the acoustic guitar when it was part of a band on a stage. Because that's a very poignant part of the book where he's listening to music, and he was very hard of hearing due to an accident at the... I guess at that time he might not have been as hard of hearing. That accident was subsequent to what happened to his loss of hearing, wasn't it?
Before he had lost his hearing,
right?
He got the idea
that he got the idea for the electric guitar. Describe that moment, if you would.
Well, the city of Washington had asked Leo to put up a lighting and sound system for their dances that they had here to raise money for bonds for the war effort that we had for World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he did. He came and put up a light fixtures and everything. And usually while he was working on this, the band who was going to be playing for the dance were warming up and listening, and talking and back and forth. And normally he would just do his work and go home. But this one time he decided, I'm going to sit and listen a little bit. And so he sat down at the end of where the band was playing and was watching it. And his eyes were looking around, and he was watching the guitar players, and he couldn't hear them. And he thought, gee, they're working really hard. And so he went ahead and listened to him and didn't pay much attention, except he kept saying, gee, it's too bad I can't hear him. And it wasn't because his hearing was gone, because he still had it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the next day, these same guitar players came into his radio shop to get some, and he never did tell me what they came in for, maybe just to talk to him. But they got to talking, and they said, you know what? It's really sad. He said, we work as hard as anybody in the orchestra, and nobody can hear us. He said, we play and play and play and play, and nobody can hear us. You can see our hands moving. You can hear our lips moving if we happen to be singing along, but we can't hear it. And Leo took that thought, and after they had left, he went and got a hunk of wood. He carved out the center of the hunk of wood and started putting electric things in there. What they were, only he knows.
Pickups.
But it was electric thing that he could turn on the music and hear it. And that was the beginning of Stratocaster and the Tele and all of the other wonderful things that came from his mind. But just because these guitar players had said, nobody can hear us, it set him on a road to wonderfulness that all of us have enjoyed.
Huh. Now, he had a tremendous work ethic. He learned it on the farm. Talk about his upbringing, about how he was raised.
Well, he was born in a barn here in Fullerton, right on the edge of Fullerton and Anaheim. This father was a farmer, a small farm of vegetables and fruit, and they took food out all around Orange County every day. Took fresh fruit and vegetables out, and Leo's job was to clean the truck. They had a truck that carried all this fruit, and after a whole day of running around Orange County, the truck was pretty messy and full of squished tomatoes and lettuce leaves and things like that. And one night, Leo was a little late in getting his work done, so it was very dark. And this was after he had come home from school, and he was sweeping all this gushy stuff off. And because it was extra dark, he stepped off the edge of the truck and did not see where he was falling, and he fell onto a picket fence, and it poked his eye out. And so from the time he was 6 or 7, he never could remember for sure whether it was 6 or 7, but from that time on, he had a glass eye.
And so he had, that was the reason that they wouldn't take him in the service, wasn't it?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that you put in the book that bothered him greatly. So he tried to do other things like help with the war bond effort, which is where the whole idea about the guitars started to come in. It was interesting. Did he invent the pickup that went inside the electric guitar as well as the whole carving the guitar as well?
Actually, he didn't. The pickup was designed, from what my research shows, it was designed primarily by the guys down at Rickenbacker, which Rickenbacker is based in Santa Ana, right here in Orange County, and also Paul Bixby was experimenting with pickups. And they're using pickups, and Leo himself, because at the time, all of them, Fender, Rickenbacker, and Bixby, and even Gibson, Les Paul and Leo Fender were friends. They were putting pickups on steel lap guitars, and that's where the pickup really got designed, or the genesis for the pickup was with the steel lap guitars.
Mm-hmm. Did the pickup have come from anything else? Was it taken from some other part of science or some other part of technology where it was used for, say, some military application or something? Or where did do you know where the idea of a guitar pickup originated, or that type of sound pickup originated?
Yeah, that's a great question. As far as I know, and I've read extensively on the topic, it came from the steel lap guitars. Mm-hmm. And that's where it all came from. In fact, I haven't even told Mrs. Fender this. I just got an email from one of the Leo Fender fans, and he actually owns a Leo Fender violin.
Really?
And he sent me pictures of it, which I've got to put on the website, but it's incredibly rare. And I think that they were actually putting pickups on violins as well, but it hadn't really transposed to a solid body guitar yet. That's where Leo came in.
I didn't know that Fender made any violins.
I didn't either. I was really, really surprised when I found that out. And this gentleman sent me pictures of it, and it's one of the rarest things I've ever seen. It was complete news to me.
Well, you know what you're going to have to call it?
What?
A Leovarius.
Wonderful. We're going to write it down.
Oh, please do. Please quote.
We'll keep it for the next book.
Oh, there you go. That's it. You know, you ought to do a book based on the lives that Leo had touched. That ought to be an effort, because the research will be fairly detailed, but it'll be easy to do because there's so many people that his products touched, and his through his charitable giving as well has touched. You know, is there a music school with his name on it?
No, I don't think there is. I went through a Rolling Stones article that had the top 100 guitarists in the world, and I checked every single one of them, and 91 out of 100 played a Fender instrument on stage. I'm not saying that they only played Fenders, but mm-hmm. they did play Fender, and he touched a lot of people.
Well, you know, you look at groups like The Ventures, who started in 1960 with Fender guitars, and then I think in like 63 or so they had another one. I'm trying to think of the name of that guitar. And then in 68 that contract expired, and they went back to playing Fenders.
Yeah, Fender's always been the choice. I mean, I grew up, you know, when my dad gave me guitars.
Right. Well, your dad worked for...
I came home with a Gibson once, and my dad was a pretty gentle guy, but he wasn't amused. Yeah. But you know, they're great guitars.
Yeah, you didn't work for Henry Ford and drive a Chevy. Yeah,
right.
But your dad actually worked for. How long did he work for Leo Fender?
My dad worked there for about 10 years, or maybe longer. I don't know. He loved his job. My dad was an interesting mechanical engineer. He worked making landing equipment, landing gear for the B-52,
mm-hmm.
and then he designed Hot Wheel cars.
Oh, really?
But he always said his favorite job was with Fender.
That's interesting. Yeah, I played with Hot Wheel and Gorgie cars when I was a kid. Maybe I played with something your dad worked on. All right, stand by, Leo. Oh gosh, Brandel and Phyllis.
That's all right.
Sorry, I mean that's not a bad mistake to make. All right, stand by on AM.
This is Herman Cain, and you're listening to Liberty Watch, so that government remains the servant, not master.
We have more than 30 states that are receptive to fixing these structural flaws, starting with the balanced budget amendment. The Compact for America approach enables us to organize the states in a formal binding agreement to get the job done, so we can fix these other structural problems that if we don't fix will lead to tyranny or a system crash, one way or the other.
Liberty Watch, so that government remains servant, not master. An America armed and free. Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., right after Swap Shop.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line. That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind.
And welcome back to Liberty Watch. We're listening a little bit to Glenn Campbell there with his probably signature record, Gentle on My Mind. And the man that made his guitars is was Leo Fender, and we have Leo's biographer and his widow Phyllis and his biographer Dr. Randall Bell on the line. Dr. Bell's dad worked for about 10 years for Leo, and what did Leo think of Glenn Campbell?
He loved him. Leo Fender would often say that out of all the guitarists out there, he liked Glenn Campbell the most.
because of his technical skill, or was it something about personal about Campbell?
You know, it was a personal skill. He loved to watch his hands whenever we could see him on TV. He loved to watch his hands, how it was moving on the guitar and the sounds that were coming out. Just made, if you want to say, he made Leo giggle. Hmm. And he really enjoyed it.
Hmm. Interesting. And what was his relation? Was he friends with Glenn Campbell? Was he, you know, I realize he wasn't big on celebrity. He didn't really care who you were. He was, you know, he treated everybody the same, but was he friends with Campbell, or did he know him very well?
No, didn't know him, but I think if he had had the opportunity to meet him, he certainly would have taken it. But no, he liked to just be quiet and work. And working.
Yeah, work and nothing but. All right, hold on. And
we're happy that he did work.
Oh yeah, no question there. All right. And let's see. Elaine, you are live with Dr. Randall Bell and Phyllis Fender. Your comment or question for us?
Yes, I was listening this morning and caught your interesting conversation. My dad and his partner back in the 40s were a harmonica act called the Polka Dots. They originally started off as the Harmonicats or something even earlier than that, right out of the service. And I sat in the basement with my dad when he built an amplifier and pickup for their harmonica act. And the pickup was placed on their throats with a ascot around it, and they had this really nice uniform type thing they wore on stage. And they stood behind the amplifier, which was all decorated. They were known as a variety act. And the harmonica sound came out of the amplifier, and nobody could see that the wire was attached to the back of the amplifier through their pockets of their uniforms. It was pretty interesting, but I sat there, a little girl, watching him build this thing, and this was in the, had to be early 50s.
What a wonderful story that is. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome, and I don't know if he picked the idea up from Fender or from Les Paul, but it was in those years, I'm sure. And my dad was, you know, just a blue-collar guy. He was not an engineer or anything. He just figured this out and did it.
Well, we're glad he did.
Okay, thank
Interesting.
You.
Interesting. All right. And that opens up a line for you in the Perfection Auto Works studios at 520-790-2040. If you'd like to ask Phyllis Fender or Dr. Randall Bell a question, I've got enough for the hour, but I'd much rather hear from you, you know, and make the radio interesting. You never know what you're going to hear. Is Buddy Holly's name actually spelled wrong on the tombstone that has Leo Fender's guitar right?
That is true. Buddy Holly passed away, and on his gravestone, they have the Stratocaster right, but Buddy's name is spelled wrong. Now, there's a little, to kind of fill in on that, there's, I guess, two ways of spelling Holly. One's the Americanized version that Buddy used, and the other was the going back to Europe. But the joke is that it was spelled wrong, but they got the guitar right.
Yeah, they got the guitar right, the Fender on there, the Fender guitar. Now, he made so many different models, and he always had a new design idea, but none of those, well, I could say none, but very few of those original guitars are and none were preserved by him, right? He never saved a single guitar?
He didn't bring any guitars home. He didn't know how to play a guitar. He didn't know how to tune a guitar, but he sure knew how to make them. And he just decided that, why bring something home that tomorrow is going to be old? So he said, tomorrow I'm going to make a better one, so we'll leave the other ones in the shop, and we'll just take the plans home, and I'll work on them tonight and make a new one tomorrow.
Mm. How do you think he made such great guitars without knowing how to play one?
Well, when I came into the picture, which was after almost everything had happened. I came in the G&L time, not the Fender plant itself.
Right. And I should tell the audience. I should tell the audience. He sold.
His plant.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I was going to say the reason that he could do all of this work was to almost all of them that were in the factory were guitar players. Mm. And he would get an idea and they would create an instrument, bring it into his lab, and then they would come in and play. And then they would say, well, does this work? How does this feel? Is it comfortable? All these questions. And he didn't need to know anything else. He needed to know how to make them.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about his lab.
It's really...
Guys, are you still
it's
on...
a fun place to go because...
Are you still on speaker?
I can tell you there are no windows. He didn't want windows. He didn't want any distractions. It had popcorn, acoustic ceilings, fluorescent lights, and green military tables with lots of drawers for capacitors and resistors and electronic parts. And it's very stark. It was built for efficiency. It wasn't built to show off, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's there's some pictures of it in the book, and it really is. It's kind of ersatz, I would say. You know, it's a very functional, not you know, practical, not pretty. So he was more into function than form, wasn't he? Well,
right.
with everything but his guitars, he was into function, not form. But talk about the form. I mean, he did some outrageous things with the finishes of guitars. Where did such a guy that couldn't care less what most things looked like as long as it was neat, where did he get the flash part of the guitar designing thing?
That's a great question, Charles, because the first guitars that Leo made was called the Esquire, and he painted it kind of a brown, very much like an acoustic guitar, and then he just somehow got the idea, you know, why just brown? Let's go red, green, blue, purple. You know, he just went surfer stripes. He just kept going on and on, and the more he did it, the more the public reacted, and they kept just doing it to the point where I think he exhausted every potential color out there. G&L has some colors now that are just spectacular. I have a G&L. It's the most beautiful guitar I've ever seen. But Leo, just despite being a very quiet, non-assuming guy, he was actually very inventive and very, very creative.
You said creative? You fell off there.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was very, very creative.
Okay. And... do you have that guitar there handy, or are you at Phyllis's place and you're not where you can reach it?
Oh, I'm in the Fender home, and that guitar is at my house, so I don't have it.
Oh, all right, okay. I was going to say, because on the next break, if you have a guitar, if you've got a Fender there to plug in and play, it'd be kind of fun to hear just to hear a few chords on a Fender guitar. Now, one of the originals that Leo made is in their museum, is it? No, it's the last guitar he made, right? Is in the museum?
Well, yeah, actually the first guitar he made is in the museum, and then there's a spectrum of guitars, you know, the Mustang, the Jaguar, the Fender Strat, the Telecaster, and then the very last guitar that Leo made is a complete mystery.
Huh. No one's ever played it?
I've never played it. It's in the museum. The best way to describe it is a six-string baritone bass. It's an odd guitar. And I think it was Leo's way of just saying, you know what, I've made something that's mystified all of you. He handled it the last day he was alive and left it to the world to say, keep creating, keep inventing.
He didn't call it the Rosebud, did he?
Probably not, because he never went to any movies.
Movies, so right. According to your book, he went to only one.
Only one.
Yeah, one movie in his entire life. All right, stand by, guys. We're at the bottom of the hour break, so we're going to take the break on AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. If you just joined in, we're with Phyllis Fender and also Dr. Randall Bell. They have a book called Leo Fender, The Giant Heard Round the World. Did I get it right?
It's the quiet giant.
The quiet giant heard round the world. Okay. Sorry. Oops. All right. I read it. I don't have the name down to memory.
They're looking for this color-shifted society more than remedying past injustices. We redefine racism and discrimination. If we can't find lynching and firebombing, we redefine things so that the kind of government that you have to have so that it can continue capturing, checking, keeping record of, and then remedying is one that is totalitarian at its basis.
Liberty Watch. and America Armed and Free. Sunday is noon to 2, right after Swap Shop.
From a 1963 recording in black and white by The Ventures. And with us on the line is Phyllis Fender and also Dr. Randall Bell of the book Leo Fender, The Quiet Giant Heard Round the World. It's excellent. You get done with it, you feel like it's only 186 pages. You feel like you know the man and like you understand the operation. Any idea how many guitars they made altogether?
Oh my gosh,
that's a great question. I had tens of thousands, maybe millions. I knew the numbers at one time, the daily production numbers. At one time, Leo Fender had 1,000 employees, and he was proficient with every single one of their jobs. He was a very hands-on guy.
Yeah, but he didn't micromanage them though.
No, not really. He if you worked for Leo Fender, you knew you were good because he was a perfectionist both in himself and the people that worked around him. But there was a one story that really stands out. There was a new guy on the production line, and Leo would always watch the production line every day, and he saw that this guy wasn't quite doing the job as efficiently as he could. So Leo went up to him and said, hey, you made some suggestions on how to do the job better. And the guy said, hey, buddy, you do your job and I'll do mine. He didn't realize he was talking to Leo Fender, and Leo just said, "All right," and smiled and walked away. He was a very easy guy to get along with.
Oh boy, I know a couple business people, one of whom is president, that I know what the next two words out of his mouth would have been. All right, let's see. We got a caller. Chuck wants to talk to you. Chuck, you're live on Liberty Watch with Phyllis Fender and Dr. Randall Bell, the biographer. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, how many acoustical guitars did they make? I have one, a 12-string acoustical, that was given to me by friends of ours that work for the company in 1976, and they were made in Japan and then shipped to California, and this guitar came in and had a cracked body. And they gave it to the secretary, and secretary happened to be a good friend of my wife's. And we were over there, and I started playing the guitar and stuff. And she said, well, why don't you just take it home? I still have that 12-string.
I didn't know Fender made acoustic instruments.
It was made in Japan for them, and the factory sold them.
Leo sold the company in 1966 for health reasons, but he still continued to work there for many years afterwards, and then eventually started his own called G&L. So the production in Japan was after Leo owned the factory, I realize that. But, guys, I don't want to get in front of the guests. Talk about that acoustic Fender guitar.
Well, you're absolutely right. I'd love to see the guitar. There's not that many 12 strings with a broken body or not. It's still a rare guitar. Leo started, he sold the company, as you said, 65, 66, but Leo stayed there. And Leo was very proud of the fact that the instruments remained in the USA, but the executives that, you know, the CBS executives that bought the company, they started outsourcing to, you know, overseas, and Leo, frankly, was not happy about that. Leo actually started making electric or acoustic guitars right here in Brea, which is a city just north of Fullerton. And he did that actually before he sold Fender in the 65 timeframe. So, yeah, Leo Fender did start acoustic guitars. They were made here in Orange County for a while, and then the CBS guys, they started outsourcing it. But it's kind of an interesting history.
Mm-hmm. So the acoustic guitars were begun after the electric guitars.
Oh yeah, yeah, no question about it. The first electric guitar was a 1950 the Fender Esquire.
Hmm. Boy, I wonder what one of those is worth today.
They're worth six figures. I was just in a meeting with an attorney, and he had a Telecaster built in the '60s, I think, and we looked it up during our meeting. is worth $21,000. But you go back to the Esquire, there's six figures on those.
Huh. All right. Chuck, did you have a follow-up?
No, just that Jack and Annette worked there for years, and he finally retired. He just passed away recently, but I still have the guitar.
If you, Randall, if you want to, I'll get Chuck's info for you, and you guys can communicate off the air, and I will, I'll facilitate it. Chuck, do you have a way of taking a picture so that it could be transmitted electronically of the guitar?
With my phone, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'll put you on hold until the next break, which is going to be in about 7 minutes, if you can hang on, and okay. I will get you guys connected off the air if you'd like, and we can get a picture of that guitar to Dr. Randall Bell, and maybe who knows, maybe that guitar will end up in his next book.
Never know.
Could happen.
Might be. There are leads and ideas that come through this program like that. So make thou not lightest of it. All right, hold on, and we're going to go straight to air on Mark. You're live on the air with Dr. Randall Bell and with Phyllis Fender. Your comment or question for us?
Yes. Thanks, Charles. And when I was in college time frame, like a lifetime ago, I had at that time it was still an old Fender Rhodes 73 keyboard, and it used little tines. It generated the vibrations that generated the tone. And what kind of role did he play with the Fender Rhodes keyboards?
Yeah, well, Phyllis has got a great story on the Rhodes piano here in the house. But before it's a great story. But you know, Leo came across Rhodes and he really believed in the product. He just felt like it had to be reengineered, and he felt like he had the skill set to do it, which he did. He reengineered Rhodes into something really very popular, very big thing. My dad was in charge of research and development, and a lot of the research and development went around the Rhodes piano, but. But I'm going to turn it over to Phyllis to tell her piano story.
And do me a favor, guys. Come off a speaker, if you would.
Okay.
Once upon a time, a long time ago, not too long after Leo and I had gotten married, he had purchased a home for us. And I said, we really need to have a piano in this room. And Leo said, oh, okay. And then we didn't talk about it. And then we talked about it again. And I said, yeah, I think I'm going to go look for pianos. And he said, oh, that's all right. I've ordered one from our factory. And I went, what do you mean you ordered one? And he said, yeah, I'm ordering a Fender Rhodes. And I went, no. This is supposed to be furniture. Fender Rhodes are ugly. And which didn't make him real happy. And I said, they're black and they're metal, and I want a wood one and to be in the living room. He said, no, we're going to have it. And I went, Leo, please, I just want it to be pretty. And he said, well, if you want me to buy it, you're going to have a Fender Rhodes. And I went, okay, I'm still working, so I'll buy it. So 3 years later, I had it paid for, and it now sits in our living room, and neither one of us played it. So it's just sitting. But it's pretty wood. So he got happy that I didn't want a Fender Rhodes. He could have put it in the garage. Been lovely out there, but it was just not good for the living room. But that was one of the few moments when we didn't agree on things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that the Fender Rhodes tines system, I consider that to be quite a great piece of engineering work. And how it's tuned.
That's what he was, an engineer. All right, yeah. So Randall, tell us about that piano and the development of it.
Well, it's something that my dad would bring home prototypes, all the time. Leo was never content. I mean, that theme has come through both from my dad's experience and from Phyllis's recollections and what we saw of Leo. Leo would make something and he would, until it was perfect. And then he would, the next day he wanted to make it more perfect. He was just relentlessly refining and refining and refining. But he would try solid state electronics, and then he would try tube electronics, and then a combination of the two. He was just constantly inventing new ways to make improvements.
Huh. I just can't imagine a tube guitar. All right, hold on, and let's see. We'll put that on hold, and we'll go to Sean. You're live on Liberty Watch with Dr. Randall Bell and Phyllis Fender. Go ahead.
Doctor and Phyllis, thank you so much. And Charles, I'm going to tell you one thing. Brother, you know where I feel about you. Best show you've ever done.
Thank you. And the funny thing is, I don't know which direction to hold a guitar. Hardly, actually, it's not true. I did play the guitar a little bit as when I was about 9 or 10. So well, I took a few lessons.
As some of the people that are actually in the studio audience understand, I've got 23 guitars, two of Leo's, I've got two G&Ls. I am a huge fan of music because it's mathematics turned into art.
Hmm.
It is. It's mathematics turned into art.
Is that what, Sean? That's a great premise for a question. Do you think that's why Leo was a major? It was an accounting major. Do you think because he grasped mathematics so well that translated into his engineering ability? Either Phyllis or Dr. Bell.
Yeah, you know, Sean. I need that quote because I'm going to put it in the next book. That is really beautiful. You know, Leo himself, as Phyllis said, did not play the guitar. He couldn't even tune a guitar. I mean, Mrs. Fender's sister, Lori, would come by the house, and Leo would have her tune the guitars. That's an area I really got to explore. Right when I thought I kind of knew it all, I that's a great concept to explore some more.
No, it's mathematics. I mean, I'm one of these guys. I mean, it's science turned into art. I mean, the 1-4-5, really. The 1-4-5, throw in a 6. 1-4-5, throw in a 9. It's mathematics turned into art, which guys like me that are math guys, and as I play my guitars once in a while, it's how we translate, the dumb guys, translate right brain to left brain. Does that make sense?
Please sense. I totally love it. I think it's a great concept, and it's got to be attributed to you. You came up with it.
Well, I got to tell you what he does for a living. He hoists multi-million pound loads of things and gets them into exact position. I mean, exact. The things that have to be bolted together. That's what he does for a lifting. He's a rigger. I know he's given this on the air before, so Dr. Bell, have you got a pen handy?
I actually do not.
Never do a radio interview without pen and paper to write things down. What would Leo think without your notebook in your pocket, sir? Okay, are you ready to write?
I'm getting there.
Let me know when you're ready to write. I'm going to give you Sean's.
Okay, I'm ready.
I'm going to give you Sean's number. I know he doesn't mind it on the air.
Cause I don't
care.
He's, no, yeah,
his number is 520-780-8539. Call him after the interview. Again, 520-780-8539. Call him after the radio interview is over, and get with him about doing research on the next book.
And I've been through Corona, guys. I mean, the most fascinating factory tour ever for a guy that actually, I see stuff built every day. I see manufacturing every day. I've been through Corona. I met Grover down in San Dimas. I've got, like I said, I got 23 guitars made in custom shops all across the country. Leo Fender's one of the greatest guys ever come along, man. He armed us dreamers. He armed us dreamers with music. And that's the game right now. It's, you know, turning math into art is what we call music.
This might be a good time. Appreciate it, Sean. This might be a good time for the reveal, if you want to make it, about why Leo was so driven to make guitars. Phyllis, do you want to say it?
Okay. Well, Leo was a businessman. He thought business. He worked business. He lived business. And yet, one night, he came out from his room. He had Parkinson's disease. He was in a wheelchair, and he was weeping. And I quickly ran to him and got down on my knees and said, took his hand, and I said, Leo, you know, are you sick? Do I need to call somebody? What's wrong? And he just kept weeping and weeping. And I said, Leo, talk to me. Tell me what's going on. And he said, Phyllis. And I said, yeah. He said, tell me about your Jesus. And so I stayed there on my knees and told him about my Jesus. And then he said, how much does it cost for me to be a Christian? And I went, it's already been paid for. I think it was called the cross. And he said, oh, okay, thank you. And he turned around and went back in his room. And all of that, later on, I thought about the things that Leo had told me over the years. And he told me that Jesus had come to him years and years and years ago and told him the reason that he wasn't a guitar player or any musician was the fact that the world needed musicians. And all guitar players were angels. And because the world needed music, we couldn't survive without it. And Leo's position in life was to make the best instruments that any musician could play. And that was especially for guitars. And he truly believed that with his whole soul.
Hmm. Well, that's a perfect point to end this segment with. We'll be back for one more segment. Appreciate you sharing that with us, Phyllis. And if you want to call in and ask Phyllis Fender or Dr. Randall Bell, his biographer, about Leo Fender or his wonderful guitars. Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen. Russ, you're on the air.
I'm having a yard sale today. Sheets, pillowcases, and also a bunch of shams.
What other show on Tucson can you engage in a sham and it's a profit for both sides?
I'm having a moving sale, so I really, really need it.
I hope you have a very moving sale.
Oh, okay.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Lay your head up on my pillow. Hold your warm and tender body close to mine. Hear the whisper of the raindrops blowing song against the window, and make believe you love me one more time. For the good time.
AM 1030, KPOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice in the Perfection Auto Works Studios with Liberty Watch, where we have the joy and pleasure of having with us Phyllis Fender, widow of Leo Fender, and also the biographer. The biography is called Leo Fender, the small giant, heard around the, say the name again.
Quiet Giant,
heard around the world. It's really good because you get the feeling you knew Leo Fender after you've read the book. It really was an interesting thing. I've got caller Vince on the line, and I think I'm going to go to him first, and then I've got some things I want to ask you guys. Vince, you're live with Phyllis Fender and Leo Bell, and Randall Bell. I'll get it right by the end. It's an honest mistake. Go ahead, Vince.
Thanks, Joe. I have a question of value. In 1971, my grandmother bought me a brand new Jazzmaster guitar that I was learning how to play with at that time. And I still have the guitar today, and it was a custom blue color that was painted that I picked as a little 9-year-old kid. And I was wondering, how do you find out the value of these instruments?
Great question, Vince. What I would do if I was in your shoes, I would start with a standard eBay kind of thing, but the real place you want to go is Reverb.com, Reverb, R-E-V-E-R-B.com. That's where the more rare instruments like what you're talking about with the Jazzmaster, that's the marketplace for those kinds of, great instruments.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Sure.
There's a comment you made in the book. I don't know whether Dr. Bell, you made it or someone had repeated it to you, that everybody felt like they had a custom guitar.
I mean, Leo put so much care into every guitar, and my dad introduced me to every single person on the production line, and there was kind of a zen-like vibe that came from the place, because everybody working there knew that they were part of a greater cause, and that cause was great music, and you know, the superstars were handling those instruments, and so there was a lot of care, and it was very genuine that went into every single guitar there. And I know that sounds like a commercial, but it's the way it really was.
Speaking of commercials, briefly, he did some pretty innovative advertising, like the Jaguar guitar with the surfer. That's kind of fun. Why don't you talk about that real briefly?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Leo ran into a guy named Bob Perline. Bob Perline's family is actually from Laguna Beach, and I happen to know them. And he was an artist, and he was kind of a beach bum kind of guy. And he drove up from Laguna, where I happen to live now, to Fullerton, and he saw Freddie Trevorrous. And Freddie is the guy that Leo invented the Stratocaster with. And Freddie was bouncing a ball against the side. He was playing tennis against the side of the building, taking a break. And they kind of got along, so he says, well, let me introduce you to Leo. So they went in there, and Bob had this creative idea of just going around to people doing things like scuba diving or surfing or skydiving, handing them a guitar and letting them play it, snapping some pictures, getting a release sign, giving the guy $20, and then making an ad out of it. And Leo loved it because it was innovative and it was cheap.
Yeah, right. And there was a possibility there that you guys missed. You could have had the scuba caster. All right. Anyway, what was Leo's opinion about people who smashed or burned his guitars?
What a happy man. Leo and
I'm sorry, what a happy
bartender Esther, who passed away way before I met Leo, had no children. And so he considered his instruments his children. So you can imagine if he sees on TV or something, somebody smashing one of his babies, his child, on the stage or setting it on fire. That's how he felt. He said, it's my child. They're doing that to my child. And he got a little warm around the collar and was not happy at all with that kind of action. He loved that these guitar players that were doing this, they had fabulous talent, but what they were doing to the instruments outside of just playing them really, really made him sad.
Hmm. How did he get along with Les Paul?
Oh, well, they were friends. They occasionally would have a glass of lemonade and talk about, well, what are you guys doing at your plant this day, or what are you planning on? They did not envy either one. Leo always told me, he said, why should I be mad that he's making wonderful guitars? He said, the business with new people coming in making guitars, this is good for business. And so we want more people buying guitars. He said, of course, if they really want a good one, they'll buy mine. And I laughed so hard the day that he said that I had to leave the room.
That's funny. One last question, because we're almost out of time. We're down to the last 2 minutes. And is, in what way did Leo Fender bridge the generation gap?
You know, it was really interesting going down to the plant, because you'd see guys, you know, Leo, Freddie, my dad, the other guys, sitting across, and all these guys, by the way, were very conservative. They had the plastic pocket protectors, you know, short hairs and crew cuts. And sitting across the table was, a complete hippie with hair down to his waist. And yet they would connect. They respected each other. They liked each other. It was really a cool thing to witness.
Hmm. So, but I mean, how did that translate outwards into society, do you think, if it did?
I'm a sociologist. I mean, that's a great question. I don't know, other than it didn't
I'm sorry, if I'd have realized that at the beginning of the interview, I might have been more sensitive in my questions. No, I'm sorry. I interrupted your answer. Go ahead, Dr. Bell.
No, it's good. It's all good. No, my PhD is in sociology, but it certainly happened within the plant. There was a lot of respect. I mean, my dad, we'd hound him, asking him, you know, which rock stars came through, because they came through every day. And, you know, one day my brother got out of him. My dad spent the entire day with Eric Clapton. But these guys would come through the plant, and there was just a mutual respect. No autographs, no pictures. It was just all about the instruments, getting the right vibe, and mutual respect. Leo respected everyone he ever met.
And Eric got Black Beauty out of the deal, if I remember the book correctly.
Right, yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's the name of his guitar. All right, guys, we're out of time. Again, one last time, the book title is?
It's Fender, The Quiet Giant Heard Around the World. It's on Amazon. Mrs. Fender signed all the copies for Christmas, so if you order one for the bookstore on Amazon, you're going to get Mrs. Fender's signature.
Great.
And all right. Mine.
All right, good. Guys, we're out of time. Have a great day.
Thanks.
You're welcome. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice in the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Stay tuned for America Armed and Free.